I don't want to talk rubbish and say, oh yeah, I speak all of these languages and they're all amazing. It's just not true.
What's up, Kodakodas? Welcome back to the podcast. So today we talked to Richard Simcott, who is not just any polyglot. He's actually classified as a hyper polyglot because he studied over 50 languages. He is supposedly native level in not just one language, but over six languages. In the podcast, we talk about how he got started learning languages, what his thoughts are on native level, language attrition, and his personal journey with the languages that he speaks today.
But you guys know that you guys have to absolutely destroy the like button in over 50 languages, guys.
50 accounts.
50 accounts. Yeah, there we go. That's how we do it.
Per person.
Or maybe not 50 accounts on Twitter, but just follow us on Twitter. You already know where at. We'll catch you on that at the end of the podcast.
Hope you guys enjoy it. So yeah, Richard, can you give us a quick background of who you are and where you're at today?
My name is Richard Simcott. I am originally from the United Kingdom. I have been studying languages from the age of around 5, and I basically work and study languages all the time. That's not just what I do as a hobby, it's my job, it's what I love doing, it's a passion, it's a lifestyle choice, I guess. Yeah, I'm continually learning and continually growing and enjoying learning from people around me. And I absolutely love the chance to speak to different people from different places, and particularly in their languages, if possible. To that end, I also help to encourage other people to do the same. I give advice on my own channel, Speaking Fluently, and also set up the Polyglot Conference, where we celebrate languages and cultures from around the world and bring together people who work with languages or in languages or through languages from all over the world, as well as academics and language enthusiasts and people just interested in learning, whether it's their first or their 31st language. Anyone and everyone is welcome. Just the love of language is what's needed.
Yeah, earlier you said how you started studying languages when you were 5 years old. Did you like consciously make that decision to study a language, or was it more like the environment forced you to study a language?
At school, I had French from a young age. I must have been around 5 when I started learning French. And I grew up in a part of the UK where we had a number of different accents as well, and dialects, as well as Welsh and English. I was exposed to a number of languages from a young age. A little bit later, from about maybe the age of 7 or so, I had a stepmother from Thailand. So I also had influence from Asia as well in my life, particularly from Thailand. Having all that around me growing up just inspired me to continually try to learn more and to explore different ways of speaking, different speech patterns locally, but also ones that I would hear at school, words, studies for my education, and also privately for my home life.
Do you feel like there's a difference learning languages when you're a kid versus later on? Kind of also like touching upon like the idea of like natural language acquisition with the critical period.
So there are differences, of course, depending on how you're learning it as well. So if you're learning it as a home language, then there's a difference to learning it as a language that you have as a subject at school or in a club or somewhere else. The thing I would say, just as a learner from a young age to an adult, is that as an adult, we're often better equipped with other tools that we can use. For example, we've already been through the process of reading and writing in a language. And so we can often capture things that maybe children can't in the same way, like representing things through different scripts, certain etherical concepts of, you know, ideas of what important means and what essential means. And these kinds of words are quite difficult to grasp as a young child, whereas the types of vocabulary that you'd learn as a child would be things that you can physically see and touch and feel, and emotions that would be more connected, like I'm hungry would be a more common emotion, for example, than I feel stressed, for example. Where children, I think, do have an advantage is that the psychological barriers have not yet been raised in the same way as they are for adults. As adults, we're often a lot more conscious. I think that starts to happen from the age of 7 onwards. Our peers start to become more important from that age. We start to have these connections. We perceive ourselves slightly differently, sometimes through comments from other people, sometimes because we are more conscious of our own bodies and our own selves. And so when that happens, obviously, we're more conscious of making mistakes, being perceived as being inferior or silly or stupid or whatever it is that might be a negative, have a negative impact on our learning. So as adults, often we are confronted with that. And so we often perceive children as having this natural advantage of, or they just pick it up. I would often say that what children do is they just don't mind making mistakes and falling down as much as adults, because they're used to it. They did it with their first language. Doing it with another language doesn't really change things that much. Whereas as adults, we forget that process we went through quite easily. And we forget the detail of, you know, making all those mistakes in our first language, and we carry on to the next language and we think we should be perfect straight away. And we have these crazy expectations on ourselves, which as children, I don't think we do in the same way.
I read that you, it says that you speak at a native level for, I think, 6 languages. I don't know if that's changed at this point. What are your thoughts on native level and whether or not accent is part of that?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I mean, native level is very subjective anyway. What does it really mean? I think when I learnt most of my languages, there were no such things as C1 or C2 exams. Some of the languages that I speak to a high level, for example, I went to study in Spain and I was interviewed in Spanish, French and English. And they said, okay, you can study there as a speaker of that language for the course. So I had a choice of where I wanted to study and for that to be my home language. And of course, since then, I've also lived in the Netherlands, and I've lived in Germany, and I've lived in the Balkans. So now Macedonian's been my home language for 17 years. That's a fair whack of time to be in touch with the language. So obviously, over many, many years working with these languages that I would say are my better languages in terms of my awareness and linguistic awareness and cultural awareness of the places. They are languages I've had a lot of experience using for work and in my personal life. So, but where the line is between that and the exams that people talk about is, someone may disagree with me, someone may agree with me, and to be honest, it doesn't really make a difference. I think, you know, you're always going to have people that will appreciate or agree and or not appreciate and not agree whenever you make any kind of statement that's, let's be honest, subjective.
Right. But I do need to point out one thing, and that is, although native level may be subjective, if you do watch every episode of the Korekara podcast, you will just become native. It's just one of the things of the show. I just got to quickly introduce that part to you, Richard, being a guest of the show now. So now you are imparting that power onto everyone else. So you love to see that aspect on here. And I mean, one other thing too is, so you mentioned native in 6 languages, but I mean, as a hyper polyglot, how many languages does that mean you are able to speak right now, just in general across any level? Because I mean, heading the Global Polyglot Conference, you got to be at the top of the languages, right? You got to have all the language infinity stones right there, right?
How many languages you speak is a very difficult question. It sounds silly. For anybody who's studying 1 or 2 languages to say, oh, well, how on earth can you not know how many languages you speak? And I want to just sort of preface that a little bit and say it's a super difficult question when you learn multiple languages from multiple countries, and particularly with languages that are related to each other. I might not feel I speak a language, but then at any given moment, you may reactivate a language that you studied. And then someone will say, oh, well, you said you didn't speak that, but you do, you're communicating. And again, with this sort of subjective view on things, it's quite difficult to give an answer that everyone's going to be happy with. Yeah, I mean, I kind of avoid the question slightly, and I do that very deliberately, and I'm not going to pretend that I don't. I like to give an answer that I think is real. I don't want to talk rubbish and say, oh yeah, I speak all of these languages and they're all amazing. And it's just not true. And I don't think it's fair to anybody to pretend. So I've studied over 50 languages over the course of my life. A number of those languages are related, and some of them quite closely. So my focus in life has been mostly on the Romance, the Germanic, and the Slavic languages. And so they are individuals, they have a number of things in common. There are a number of words in common that even on the face of it do not appear to be the same, have a variation in one of the other groups. It's not like, for example, learning multiple languages that are completely unrelated. First of all, if you try and do that, you learn lots of languages that are very unrelated and geographically quite far apart. Unless you have a connection to all of those languages, how are you going to keep them up? It would become a full-time job in and of itself to do that. Whereas when you learn languages because geographically you get to use them, for instance, here I will use on a daily basis Macedonian, I will listen to Serbian and Croatian on a daily basis. I will use Bulgarian. At the moment, I use Bulgarian on a daily basis too. Turkish, Albanian, and let me think. And then regularly, I would use Greek. If I go to Greece, it's just down the road. And then at home, we use French, Spanish, German, and English, as well as Macedonian. So before I kind of leave my normal environment, we're talking about 10 languages roughly that I'm using. Not all of them are perfect in any way, shape, or form, but they're all at a point where I can communicate. And then beyond that, for work, I will often use a number of other European languages that I have to either read or speak about or speak in. And so that straight away widens that net. So we're talking of maybe another 15 languages that I'll use regularly throughout the year. That would probably bring that number to around 25 that I would use pretty regularly. Do I speak them all perfectly well? Do I make mistakes? Absolutely, I do make mistakes in a number of them. In fact, even all of them, I would even include English, I'll make mistakes from time to time. It's a natural human phenomenon. No one's going to be able to speak any language perfectly 100% of the time. But do I get my job done? Yes, I do. And do they function and serve me well? Yes, they do. And to that end, I would say, and one of the comments I see is, oh, you know, if you learn similar languages, it's easy. It can be, but it can also be a blessing and a curse, because you can mix them more easily sometimes. If you say, for example, speaking Italian and Spanish, it's very easy to then confuse the languages, and it takes quite a lot of practice to tease them apart and to speak them as individual tongues. So there's that. And the other element of, if you learn languages that are vastly different, like say you learn Nahuatl and then you learn Mandarin, you learn, I don't know, Indonesian, you learn Arabic, and then you learn Russian, and you learn Swahili, and you learn Igbo or some other language. The issue you have then is, how do you tie all of those things together? Unless you've got family, friends, or you live in a community where it's very mixed and you know you'll have regular contact, it's quite a challenge to keep all of those different languages together in your life. Whereas if you're in a position geographically where you can, without even trying, use certain languages, and then also if those languages are related, you often see the commonalities, the things that are the same, but also the things that are different. And one language, speaking that language, reminds you of the other one. So all of this is to try and get the message across that this is why it's difficult to say how many languages can you speak at any given time, because depending on what you're practicing and what you're thinking about and where you are, one language might be here and you might feel confident that, yeah, of course I speak this language. Another language might be kind of on the boundaries of, can I really say I speak it, or is it really bitty? And so I prefer people to just make their own judgments, and I have no problem with that whatsoever.
I think that's a great answer to that question. I think you brought up a lot of good points. And one thing I kind of want to point out that you mentioned in the beginning there was kind of dealing with the subjectivity, because like you mentioned, people make their own judgments, and especially being a part of this community, it's very, very apparent across any language, right? The whatever judgment people or whatever subjectivity, like, oh, I think you're at this level. Oh, no, you're at that level. So how do you kind of deal with that after kind of being with so many languages at all times? And what's your kind of mindset with that?
You mean dealing with the judgments from other people?
Yeah, dealing with the judgments.
Oh, I don't mind at all. It's absolutely, everyone's got the right to their opinion. And I respect that. And I think that one person's opinion does not mean that that's the opinion of everyone. The same way, you know, somebody might meet me and not like me for whatever reason. I might remind them of someone who done something bad to them, or they just might not like me as a person. it's possible, right?
And it's true. It's possible. And
it's, you know, there are going to be people out there that don't like me, and that's fine. I mean, I'm not here to be liked by everyone. I would hope that I would always do something good for people, and if people like me, then I'm very happy. Obviously, it's something we, as human beings, I think we're sociable animals, generally speaking, and I definitely, it's nice to be liked. At the same time, my business of what goes on in your head stops at your nose. You know, unless you're verbally abusing me and being obnoxious or being rude or infringing on my rights, what goes on in your head and what your thoughts are about me are completely up to you. And I have no right whatsoever to try and change that in any way, because I'm not necessarily going to be able to do that anyway. So if you think that my Spanish is awful, well, fine. It's absolutely your subjective opinion and your right to have that subjective opinion to deem my Spanish as being unworthy of your gold crest or whatever it is you want to put on your seal of approval. That's absolutely fine. So when it comes to those kinds of opinions, yeah, I mean, I take them as they come. And certainly I've received a number of criticisms both ways, that some people think that my language ability in a particular language is better than I actually think it is. But if they want to think that, I'm not going to try and correct them. I'm going to say it make me feel a little bit uncomfortable. I've still got this very British way of, oh no, we don't go out there and boast and say that we're amazing when we don't believe we are. But at the same time, there are people that will say things that don't match my reality. So I will always take on board feedback, and I will always measure it and say, okay, is this something that I think I need to work on? Or is it something I think is a subjective opinion that I can just leave as somebody's subjective opinion and move on and get on with what I want to do? So I tend to do both. I listen, but I also know when to kind of keep people's opinions and leave them to one side and allow them to carry on happily with whatever they think.
Also on the point of like different, like fluctuating levels, and like for the language that you speak in the most, with the highest amount of fluency, do you experience language attrition? Like, I know you said since a lot of them have similarity and you can use them, do you still feel like there is like that aspect?
Hey, look, it's in waves. I mean, even the language that I grew up speaking, did all my education in English at school. All of my, you know, my schooling was through the medium of English until the age of 18. There were a few periods where I had a couple of experiences in other countries, but generally speaking, the majority of it was in English. And I went to live in France. This is before the internet, if you can imagine a time in sort of the deep, dark history of our species. And of course, at that point, calling home was really expensive. I mean, it was super expensive. We didn't have mobile phones. We didn't have the internet to be able to, in the same way as we do today. And even if we did, were the people we wanted to be in touch with even connected to it? Did they have an email address even? That wasn't a normal thing for everyone to have an email address at that point. So I was in France speaking French all the time and not really using my English at all. I remember I got back home and I had to think about certain words. And then one of the words I remember that I stopped myself. It was, and I had it in French straight away, une louche. And une louche is a ladle, soup ladle. And I couldn't think of the English word because it wasn't a word I use very often. And then it came back to me, but it was a bit weird because I knew it in French first. And so that attrition can even happen in your first language if you are separated from it for long enough, and if you're not using it with anyone while you're separated at all. and if you're not using that kind of vocabulary. Of course, it can come back as well, because it's a word that you did have, and if you hear it again or you see it again, you go, yeah, of course, it was on the tip of my tongue, you know? We all have that tip of your tongue moment. And basically, it's that tip of the tongue moment that you have in, even if you have one language, but through many languages, the tip of the tongue moment. And that's really what, when we talk about attrition, I think a lot of time it's to do with that. Sometimes it can be a little bit deeper, and you may not understand the language as much if you're removed from that context for a long enough period, that your active ability to speak might be really hampered, and even your ability to understand might be hampered too.
Yeah, I definitely feel that as well. Like with my first language was like Mandarin. Sometimes I don't speak it for a really long time. It'll be like more awkward and less natural. But there's also the aspect of, I don't think it's, maybe it's not language attrition, but for example, like I might learn about a new topic in English, for example. And then now if I'm speaking Chinese and then I have to talk about this topic, it's just like won't come out because I don't have enough vocabulary. So do you feel like when, for like, let's say other things that you're passionate about, do you go out and try to learn how to say it in different languages?
Not necessarily. Like, I mean, I'm very practical when it comes to languages and language learning and language usage. If there are certain types of vocabulary that are just not used or in the context in which I move, for example, I don't know, let me give an example of types of birds. So where I come from, knowing the different types of birds in the garden was really important as a child growing up. When I made friends with people in France, I also learned the types of birds in French because they also knew them. So my friends in France would also, they wouldn't say there's a bird in the garden, they would say there's whatever type of bird it was in the garden. When I came to the Balkans, I learned the types of birds in Macedonian. What I found was I could use those words, but not everyone knew what I was talking about because they themselves didn't pay attention to that type of vocabulary. So every language and every culture will put more importance on certain types of vocabulary than others. So going out and learning exactly what you know in every single language can often be a bit of a futile endeavor, because you end up replicating vocabulary that you're actually not going to use and will definitely fall by the wayside. So you're prioritizing something that's not important to the culture. And I think part of learning a language is actually learning things that are important to the culture. So, you know, there are going to be types of words that you're going to know in Chinese, for example, that you're not going to know in English because they don't appear in English and they're not important in English. Would you then learn them to just be able to say them? Well, possibly if you're going to give a presentation on an aspect of Chinese culture or food or whatever else. But in general conversation, are you going to use them in English? Possibly not. Is it therefore worthwhile learning them? Only if you need them for one point and then you go back to not using it again. So it may be something you learn for a specific conversation or a specific thing, but it doesn't necessarily become something in your long-term active memory.
Yeah, I definitely feel that as well. Like in Japanese, there's so many words for like flowers and fish. And then when I look them up, especially like the flowers, I look them up, it's just like a Latin name. And So it's like, I can't even learn it if I wanted to. I have to first learn Latin.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There were so many things like that. And I just had an experience of that just now. I was on a call. We were talking about Estonian. The name of the flower was Sinilil, which means literally blue flower in Estonian. I looked it up in English and I was trying to look for a common name for it. But I need to do more research to find out if there is a common name that I can use. But blue flower doesn't really make any sense. The other flowers that I saw, because they clearly are important to Estonian people to know certain types of flowers. I may try and learn it in English, but I won't sort of bust a gut to learn a word that I'm not necessarily going to use. There's a type of berry, for example, in Scandinavia called the cloudberry. If I say cloudberry to most English speakers, they don't really know what a cloudberry is. But in Scandinavian culture, that's important.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll find someone who knows the blue flower for sure. We'll get it. Korekara squad come through. But I know someone else who may know it, may or may not know it as well. But we'll see. But Richard, we've come across an important point here, an important crossroads. And I know you've gone through so much, starting off in the UK, learning languages from a very early language, from five, all the way to going to the Balkans over the course of everything with the Global Polyglot Conference, and going all the way up until this point, this moment. I know you've been working on something ever since you were five, learning that first language. So I know this is that point where you're going to go and impart us with your Kwarakwara message knowledge here. So I'm going to go and put the spotlight onto you, Richard. Let's hear your Kwarakwara message.
Learning a language, whatever language it is a really positive thing to do in life. It doesn't matter really how well you learn it. What matters is that you're doing something positive that you can then use, and it will enrich your life and potentially bring a smile to somebody else's face. And that, for me, is the thing that's most worthwhile in language learning. Just that human connection, that understanding, that extension of an olive branch to another person from another country and another culture, another territory, where you can say, I see you.
Hey guys, thanks for making it to the end of the podcast. Comment down below if you speak more than one language.
But of course, we gotta go shout out our patrons: Cedric, Jimmy, Tracy, Faraz, Kevin, Allen, Darren, Drew, Jack, Joey, Kay, Shani, Meredith, MKSXN, Polar, Suzu, Yui, and Sad Boy.